Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go on a Thursday. Great to have you in live in Los Angeles. This is The Herd, wherever you may be, however you may be listening. Fox Sports Radio, iHeartRadio, FS1, 1 hour from now. Greg Cosell, NFL meat sandwich. You bet football, you play fantasy football, you just love to get smarter with football. Greg Cosell, 1 hour from now. Joy Taylor is joining me. Joy, how are you?
This is the last day of 2020. I'm doing wonderful.
It is the last day.
Wonderful. The last day of this wretched year. Peace out, 2020. Good riddance.
That's, I feel the exact same way.
Great things ahead.
Great things ahead. Not good things. Great things ahead.
We made it, guys.
We did. We got through it. That was interesting yesterday. I talked yesterday starting the show about the power of marketing. And how, like, Brett Favre is one of you and Wranglers and Walmart and that little razor kit he's got. That feels very us. And Tom Brady is more expensive watches, supermodel wife, Uggs. That's more up there. We tend to get jealous. But it's interesting. So Bruce Arians was talking about Tom Brady in this season as we embark here in a week or two in the playoffs. Here's Bruce Arians, coach of Tom.
The Super Bowl or bust. That's the goal every year. Mm-hmm. And you can't get to the Super Bowl if you don't get in the playoffs. You know, so getting into the playoffs was huge for us. And it's been a fun year. There's a lot of football left, and we're really excited to be playing.
I disagree. I don't think it's Super Bowl or bust. Let me take you back to Peyton Manning goes to the Denver Broncos. Now, like Brady, he's kind of a free agent. He chose the best team. Denver was good. They'd made the playoffs the year before. Peyton Manning was just 36. He goes to a much more respectable franchise. Denver has always been very well run. Can't find the next Elway, but very run. He has very good stats. See if these sound familiar. 37 touchdowns, 11 picks, a 105 passer rating. Turned an 8-8 team respectable to 13-3. He lost in the playoffs. His first playoff game lost. And the feeling was, all right. It was a success. They'd gone to the playoffs with Tebow. But the sense was Peyton Manning was great in Denver. Tom Brady, like Peyton, chooses the best fit for him, Tampa. He's 7 years older. Now think about that. LeBron had his 36th birthday yesterday. Do you think I'm going to judge LeBron at 43, same as I am today at 36? 7 years for pro athletes, I don't know, seems significant. Tom delivers great stats. See if these sound familiar. 36 touchdowns, 11 picks, passer rating over 100. He turns around a losing, dysfunctional franchise, 7-9 to probably this weekend 11-5. And if he loses, he will be crushed. So Brady is much older. Turns around a much more dysfunctional franchise. Peyton Manning and Denver went 13-3. The division, the rest of the division Peyton Manning faced that year, won 13 games total. Tom Brady goes to a division with a preseason Super Bowl favorite, New Orleans, Hall of Fame coach and quarterback, and Matt Ryan, by the way, is going to get Hall of Fame votes too. He's a former MVP. If Tom Brady loses in the first round of the playoffs, why isn't he successful? By the way, did Peyton Manning face a pandemic? Peyton Manning got OTAs. Peyton Manning got a preseason. Peyton Manning played in a weaker AFC. Peyton Manning played in a weaker division. Peyton Manning, 7 years younger, it was seen as a success. Tom Brady's 43, worse franchise, harder division, harder conference, better quarterbacks in his division. And by the way, year two always feels easier. LeBron won a championship in year two in Miami, then year two in Cleveland, and year two in Los Angeles. Peyton Manning, year two, got to the Super Bowl. We all sort of understand year one, moving your entire family, offense, coach, system, teammates is tough. I mean, hell, Aaron Rodgers struggled last year, and he didn't have to move or play with new guys. He just got a new coach. Look at the leap Aaron's made. Year one, Matt LaFleur. Year two. Just saying, if Tom loses, didn't he do exactly what we thought? Take a dysfunctional franchise and turn them into winners in the playoffs? Of course he's not going to win the division. Peyton Manning didn't have this Saints roster and Drew Brees and Sean Payton in that division. To me, it's not a Super Bowl or bust. Tom's done everything I've asked in year one. This is absolutely, I predicted, a wild card and a win. But if he loses, let's not go crazy. Peyton did, and we still saw it overwhelmingly as a success. It's interesting on the marketing. Peyton's one of us. Tom's supermodel, aspirational Uggs, expensive watches. He's out there. We're still trying to discredit Tom Brady. Brady's team that he left is now a train wreck, New England. Peyton's team that he left, the Colts, won 11 games. Just saying. So Troy Aikman must be a much better sleeper than I am. I am not a great sleeper. I am a 4 or 5 hours, and then it's just, staring at the ceiling. So Troy Aikman is talking about when Dak comes back, the Cowboys have to, they're going to give Dak a new contract. Now, as you well know, if you've listened to this show, everybody in Dallas kept coming on the show and guaranteeing me Dak would get a long-term deal. And I kept saying, well, they're paying everybody else. Why won't they pay Dak? They didn't. They gave him a franchise tag. And so Troy Aikman says, don't worry about Dak. Don't worry about Dak. He's going to get his money. And if he does, I feel great. Here's Troy.
I wouldn't hesitate at all to pay him. I would sleep real good if I had Dak Prescott locked up with a big contract and not be worrying about his commitment to the team and commitment to winning.
Now, that's interesting. Commitment to the team and commitment to winning. Isn't that kind of the base of what I expect, the old Chris Rock joke? I love my kids. Yeah, that's the minimum as a parent. I think every top quarterback in the league, including Dak and Andy Dalton, even Baker Mayfield, who I'm critical of, I think they're committed to winning and committed to teammates. Some guys have egos. Some guys are goofy. Some guys aren't as responsible, Drew Lock. But I think they're all kind of committed base level to winning and their teammates. I think most quarterbacks are, they've grown up. They know the value of quarterbacking, the importance of it. But I'm just going to play a little what if. If Dallas beats the Giants Sunday, and it's going to be close. It's a 24-23 game. Giants are probably the better bet, but, Dallas, let's say they win. And Washington with a third-string quarterback loses. Dallas is in the playoffs. And Andy Dalton will have gone 5-2 since the bye. And as we talked about yesterday, it's not really fair to judge Andy Dalton. No preseason, inheriting a new coach and a new system and a new team. Concussion, COVID. Let's start at the bye with Andy. In fact, let's start at the bye with the Cowboys. They're a different team. If he wins Sunday, he goes 5-2 in his last 7 games. And as I showed you yesterday, the numbers with Dak are virtually the same. And he will want $38 million. That's more than Aaron Rodgers. That's more than Russell Wilson. That's more than Tom Brady. It's almost more than anybody not named Patrick Mahomes. Does that seem like a good business decision? Let me ask you this. If you think Dak is a good quarterback, I do. Good. Not special, not great. Let's go to the last 5 good quarterbacks who got big contracts. Jimmy G, Jared Goff, Matt Ryan, Kirk Cousins, Matt Stafford. I'll even throw in Carson Wentz. Are any of those teams happy with a contract? I'm going to go big fat N-O on that. None of them are. None of them are happy. And I'm not even going to throw the what ifs out. Oh, yes, I am. What if Andy Dalton beats the Eagles just did and the Giants down the stretch? And the offense looks good, certainly did against Philadelphia. And what if it does Sunday? When Dak last year couldn't generate a touchdown against an injury-ravaged Eagles team. If Dalton wins Sunday and they look decent offensively, he generates all sorts of touchdowns and beats both of his rivals. Dak couldn't beat one and generate a touchdown against a Philadelphia team that was throwing at lawn furniture. I'm just saying, heaven forbids Dalton wins a playoff game. I won't even go there. So again, it's not anti-Dak. But at the end of this weekend, and it'll be close, it'll come down to the last couple of minutes of the game. If Andy Dalton wins and goes 5-2 down the stretch and has the exact same numbers as Dak, and Dak's wanting $37, $38 off an ugly injury, man, Troy's a better sleeper than I am, because I would struggle with it. Because I see the Jimmy G contract and the Wentz contract and the Stafford contract and the Goff contract and the Matt Ryan contract. And I don't think any of those teams like that contract today. We'll see. That's why football's great. It's why the Giants-Dallas is two losing records. They're not even close. These are right now 5-6 wins teams. That's one of the most intriguing NFL games of the weekend. It is fascinating. Word is if the Giants don't win, they may clean house in their front office with Gettleman. I read a story about that this morning. So there's a lot on the line. It's not that I'm rooting for Andy Dalton. But, folks, if he goes 5-2 and gets to the playoffs, I'm just saying, and beats both the Eagles and the Giants down the stretch, Dak couldn't even generate a touchdown against Philadelphia. Want 38. They may franchise again. That's a lot of lettuce. That is a lot of lettuce. All right, coming up next, in my defiant support of Josh Allen, some interesting numbers for the Bills quarterback. USA Today said, if anybody had guts, you just give Josh Allen the MVP. They're not necessarily wrong. I'll lay it out next. Plus, Doug Gottlieb this hour, Greg Cosell next hour.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
USA Today has an article today. If NFL voters had any guts, they'd name Josh Allen MVP. It does take guts sometimes to vote somebody the MVP when there's a sense overwhelmingly of a very popular athlete. Years ago, sports reporter Fred Hickman voted for Allen Iverson MVP. Shaq got every vote except one. Shaq still holds it against him. Hickman was criticized. How can you vote for that? But Allen Iverson was incredibly valuable to the Sixers. He got the Sixers to a finals. What were they without him? I'm not even sure if they were a playoff team without him. I didn't think it was outrageous. Here's what's interesting. Aaron Rodgers is going to be, and I do think Aaron is incredibly valuable, but Fox Bets has the odds for the MVP, and it's really a two-person race, Aaron and Patrick Mahomes. Josh Allen is considered kind of a complete long shot. I don't think he's going to win it, but it's kind of ridiculous that he's not in the same class, and I'll give an example. So valuable to me is, what do you work with? How important are you? So Mahomes, let's take him, works with a tight end having the greatest tight end season ever. Arguably the best tight end in football. Arguably a top five tight end of all time. A wide receiver named Tyreek Hill, 15 touchdowns, 1,200 yards, fastest player in the NFL. And a head coach in Andy Reid, who's probably the best play caller, he and Sean Payton, last 20 years in football. Aaron Rodgers works with an offensive line that's rated number one in pass protection, a wide receiver that leads the league in TD receptions, a running back who's the fourth leading rusher, and a young, clever, progressive offensive coach. Josh Allen works with Stephon Diggs, and that's where it ends. The offensive line is the worst of the three in average, running back slightly below average, head coach defensive-minded, and the tight end, you tell me, a non-factor. It's not called BVP, best quarterback, right? It's just most valuable quarterback. MVP, most best quarterback, that's not it. It's most valuable. He's also, by the way, the most valuable asset to his team's overall offense. He's got 8 rushing touchdowns along with his 34 passing touchdowns. So he is intricate and important for the running game. He's just doing more with less. I mean, people say he's got Stephon Diggs. Even look at what he's done with Stephon Diggs this year. Stephon Diggs was with the very capable Kirk Cousins for years. He averaged 900 receiving yards, 73 catches, and 6 touchdowns. Without a preseason for a young Josh Allen, he's going to end up with probably 1,500 yards, 125 catches, and 8 or 9 touchdowns. That's with no preseason and no OTA. So all I'm making is the argument that it should be a three-person race here. I would vote for Aaron, but I've said I would vote for Josh in a close second. I think he's as important and working with less than Aaron with a defensive coach. And defensive coaches see the world differently. They want you to run the ball, eat the clock, win by three, and get out of town. Offensive coaches, their egos are in clever and multiple sets and giving you a different look. That's part of the ego of being an offensive coach. Those are considered the smarter of the coaches, the offensive coaches, the Sean McVays, the Kyle Shanahans, the offensive wizardry, right? The defensive guys are like tough guys. They beat up the offensive guy in an octagon. You win, you play football, special teams, Brian Flores. You don't want to mess with Tomlin or Brian Flores. They're tough guys. So, I mean, I just kind of look at Josh Allen. I think it's kind of ridiculous. It's not a three-team race, and I think it's ridiculous that you can't even put him in second without getting pushback. I would have it Rodgers slightly, and I mean slightly above Josh Allen. In fact, Sunday could change it for me, and Mahomes actually a little more distant third. Joy Taylor with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herd Line News.
You know what's funny, too, Joy? In the NBA, Josh Allen would win it. Because in the NBA, it's about the story, and his story's better. And also in the NBA, Mahomes and Rodgers would be criticized because they're, you know, like super teams. I mean, Mahomes is on a super team. Whereas in the NBA, you get value working with, like, Russell Westbrook. Durant leaves, he gets a triple-double by himself. So Josh Allen as an NBA player would be a much more intriguing story, and he'd probably win it.
I think the issue is, similarly with NBA and with NFL, is the naming of the award. Because we can never decide what is the criteria. Like last year, Giannis got it mainly because he had better numbers than he had the year before when he won it.
Yeah.
Like that was just the only argument. Like, well, he won last year and he has better numbers this year. Like, okay, but that's not what the award is. It's not a numbers award. Like, so what is the award? I think it doesn't quite roll off the tongue the same way.
Right.
But I think it's really most outstanding player.
Yes.
That's really what it is.
Yeah, I think MOP is what it should be.
Yeah, MOP is not as good as MVP.
Right.
But that's what it is. Like, if we reprogram ourselves to stop thinking it of the word value and just think who is the most outstanding player this year?
Yeah,
that's really what the award is.
Yeah, and then I would say Aaron Rodgers 1, Josh Allen 1A, and Mahomes, who's had a bad December,
but then, doesn't that make you feel more comfortable?
Absolutely.
Giving it to Aaron Rodgers?
Absolutely.
So let's all just decide together. Well, let's all in agreement. We are the truth brokers of the United States of America.
Honesty brokers in America.
Yes.
Well, the Heisman's had the same issue where it always goes to a quarterback. And there have been years where the best player, like Chase Young, was the best player in college football. But
right.
It's just understood the Heisman is just a quarterback award. It's like, or a running back out of a system which runs the ball for, you know, like Clemson's running backs behind a bunch of NFL offensive linemen are always going to have big yards.
Right. Most outstanding player.
Right.
Let's just reprogram ourselves. So Tua is playing the biggest game of his young career on Sunday. If the Dolphins win, they secure their spot in the postseason. But Tua is not putting any extra pressure on himself to get the win.
That's it for me. There's really, you know, no extra added pressure for me. I would say the expectation for myself is very high in, you know, how I perform and how I go out there and try to lead the guys to victory. Obviously, you know, this past weekend, you know, I didn't play to that standard. And, you know, it's more so like me knowing that, you know, we got to go out there and, you know, got to get the job done.
Basically, he's saying he always has pressure on himself, so there is no added pressure.
So forget what we say as broadcasters or fans say. If he got benched a third time and looked small against Josh Allen, well, what does teammates think? It feels like there is pressure.
There's definitely pressure, especially because I would say that there's added pressure because of where the Dolphins pick in the draft this year. If the Dolphins didn't have Houston's pick, there wouldn't be as much pressure because we'd know this is the guy that you are going to have for at least the next couple of years.
Yeah,
he's obviously not struggling so much that you're going to get a high draft pick.
Right.
So this is the guy. But it makes things interesting that the Dolphins have that top pick. That's really the twist in this story because while I do think that Tua needs more time to develop,
he's a rookie.
He's going to get compared to Joe Burrow and Justin Herbert, as he should, because those are his contemporaries. Whether that's fair or not, again, who cares about fair? Life's not fair. This is what it is. This is a competitive industry. You have to perform, which he knows. But I think that pick is what makes things interesting for Tua.
Listen, if he looks small and gets benched, You cannot tell me columnists will not write about, what do you do with that number three pick? Like, that feels like pressure to me.
And it's fair. It's fair for them to do that because
absolutely.
This is the world we live in.
That's exactly
right.
They
would lock up the five seed with a win. Really, the issue for the Dolphins and the benching is that Ryan Fitzpatrick is able to push it down the field, and Tua is not getting a lot of air yards this season. It's all dink and dunk, and that might not get it done. Even though we don't know what Buffalo is going to do with their personnel this weekend. So another team that has to win to get into the playoffs is the Browns. They need a win over the Steelers Sunday to secure their first trip to the postseason since 2002. It's about to be 2021, so that's a long time. And Baker says the team is already in playoff mindset.
The mentality here is we're in our playoffs just 1 week early. It's win or go home. So that's the mentality for our guys, but we have the talent, we have the scheme, we just have to go out there and execute it and do our jobs. These are the moments you ask for when you're little, you dream of playing in the games where it comes down to you have the ball in your hands and you want to take care of business.
I'm so excited for this weekend. It's really an extra, he's right, like, this is just a bonus playoff weekend. It's a playoff game for them, it's a playoff game for the Dolphins, it's a playoff game for the Cardinals.
I think the line's up to like 10, so they...
Well, Mason Rudolph is getting the start.
Yeah, that's not great.
So, if the Browns lose to the Steelers, they can still make the playoffs. If the Colts lose to the Jags, wouldn't count on that. And the Titans lose to the Texans.
I wouldn't count on that.
And the Ravens and Dolphins both win. So they're not completely done if they lose, but there's a lot of scenarios that have to go their way. So they want to just control their destiny and get this win, which they should have done last week against the Jets, but obviously they didn't have all of their personnel.
Yeah.
So Phillip Rivers is looking to take the Colts to the playoffs in his first season with the team. They need a win and some help to get in, and he realizes this could be his last game in the NFL. He said, it did cross my mind. If things don't go the way you want this weekend, it could be. I guess it's healthy to have that thought because we're not guaranteed anything going forward. He also said he doesn't want this to be the end, but he knows it's a business and he recognizes his age. He did tie Dan Marino for fifth place on the career touchdown list with 420 this season. He's also fifth in all-time passing yards.
You know, two games this year, Baltimore and Pittsburgh, where Indy is clearly the better team in the first half on script. And then in the second half, Lamar and Ben, second half, you're off script, right? There's more ad-libbing. You make adjustments at half, but you're off script. And in both second halves, Ben and Lamar look so much better and so much more dynamic. And it's unfair because he also had a really good second half against Green Bay. But those games just stick in my mind. The Baltimore game and the Pittsburgh game, they had control of, and in the second half, he just couldn't make enough plays. And maybe it's unfair, but I just think Chris Ballard looks at that and think, we're so close to being like a 12-win team.
Oh, they absolutely are. They have great pieces.
Yeah.
And it's not that he's had a bad season. He's 68.2 completion percentage, ninth in the NFL in passing yards, 23 touchdowns, 10 interceptions. Perfectly capable, but yeah, he does have limitations.
Big. And you
now,
saw
he looks more stable than he did last year with the Chargers offensive line, but we knew that was going to happen. I could see this being his last game, mostly because the quarterback shuffling that's going to go on in this offseason is going to leave a team like the Colts open and available. He only has a one-year deal. Obviously, Sam Darnold, Carson Wentz, these are conversations being had at that position. I mean, imagine if Carson Wentz is there in this situation and you're the Colts next season. Like, don't you feel a lot better about where the Colts are if Carson Wentz is there?
Oh, God, yes. Absolutely.
And forget the season that Carson Wentz has had this year.
I watched the Steelers-Colts last week, and I said this Monday, all I could think about all game is, God, Carson Wentz would make these teams so much better. Just more dynamic, bigger, and then...
Yeah, well, the Steelers are going to be stuck with Ben until Ben decides to leave, and then they'll have to scramble and figure out what
that's
to do.
That's not going
to
be a pretty ending.
Yeah, well, that is definitely what the Steelers do. That is on brand. Yeah. They don't have a replacement.
Joey with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Lie News.
We've got a podcast, All Ball, iTunes, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing. You know, it is... Whether quarterbacks are good or bad, underrated or overrated, it really comes down to a number. It's a salary cap. What can I pay my quarterback? If he's good, you want to pay him about $26 million. If he's great, you may have to pay him $36 million. And I've said this. I like Dak. And he's better than Dalton. But I've laid this out for 2 days in a row. If Andy Dalton goes 5-2 off a bye, Doug, wouldn't you and beat Philadelphia and the Giants down the stretch? It is a hard night's sleep saying, I got to pay Dak $38 million. Isn't it harder than we're all making it out to be?
It is. And look, I listened to yesterday and I thought, finally somebody said it. And it's the idea of, couldn't you pay Andy Dalton like 10 a year, right, for 3 years? Get a viable backup, whether it's a Jameis or a Mariota type, right? Somebody who had been a starter who needs a little bit of and have him as a viable backup. And collectively, they could make less than $20 million. And I know fans sometimes have trouble understanding this, but if Jerry Jones saves money on a quarterback, he doesn't put it in his pocket, right? He can spread it around to the defense, the holes within that team that need to be shored up. So, and oh yeah, by the way, the smart thing to do with their first round draft pick would be to trade it and get seconds and thirds. And again,
yes,
load up with youth on the defense side. Those are the smart things. The thing is, we're yet to see somebody really do that.
Right.
Right. Take a guy who's really good. Not great. Okay, Dak Prescott is not great. No one can argue with me that he's great. And I don't think anybody would put him in that category of the top five, top six, top seven dudes. Case in point, just like last year, they're beating the bad teams, losing to the good teams. Would you save $20 million a year, $25 million, $30 million a year, and spread it on your defense with a quarterback who, again, no one thinks is great, but if you surround Andy Dalton or an Andy Dalton type with a bunch of guys, they can raise up his level and he's fine. Do I think Dallas will do that? Of course not. That's not who Jerry Jones is. Is it a fascinating idea that somebody is going? That's kind of what the Chargers tried to do a little bit, right? Was draft the future and start a guy who's fine, and you just surround him with talent. It lasted all of one game. But that it's a great idea. I just don't think that anybody, especially the Dallas Cowboys, is going to try and pull it off.
Yeah, no, Dak's going to get his money, but it does. You start looking at Dalton in their first 4 years in the league and how they play now, and the gap is not as enormous as everybody makes it out to be, though I do prefer Dak. So, you know, here's an interesting one. So Brady is 7 years old than Peyton Manning when he went to Denver, and that's not a small thing. LeBron's 36. At 43, when you're hosting your show and I'm hosting mine, we're not going to hold LeBron to the same standard at 43, at 36. Like, it's for you and I, it's not a big gap. For professional athletes, it is gigantic. Peyton Manning went there to a really functional 8-8 team that had been to the playoffs, had the same numbers as Brady, and we were okay with a loss. We were like, you know what? He's really good. This is awesome. Brady's gone to a totally dysfunctional at 43-year-old franchise, turned them around. They may win 11 games. And I have a feeling if he loses in the playoffs, we're like, this isn't good enough. And I'm like, I don't know, Doug. If we know year two for LeBron, Peyton Manning, we know year two is kind of the year, right? What if Brady loses first round? Is it a failure?
The reality is, no, it's not a failure. The problem is shows like this one, shows that precede yours, you know, Undisputed, and speak for yourself, it would, in many people's minds, it will be deemed a failure, especially because Bruce Arians has said Super Bowl or bust, right? He put that out there. The reality is, you're right. I mean, it's one of the reasons, and I know we're not getting to the NBA, but, you know, it's like I'm not as down on the Clippers as everybody else is. People forget that LeBron's first year in L.A. was an abject disaster. They got rid of half the team, they got rid of the coach, and then they won a championship in year two, which I don't think is crazy to see the Clippers doing. And in the NFL, you know, change is great. Transition is really hard. And this has been a tough transition process. But yeah, I mean, like, look, he's given them signs of life and signs of competent quarterback play can lead you to a divisional title and a win. But there's a ceiling there. Can't beat the Saints. And if you think that Tampa, and I know Tom has been great in cold weather, if you think they're going into Green Bay in the dead of winter when he struggles to throw the ball deep in warm weather, and he's going to spin it around the yard, like, it doesn't feel like the matchup they want. But I think generally he's made the best of a hard situation. Has it been A+? Have they blended the two styles? No. Is it getting better? Yes. It's really hard to tell because when we saw Brady, you know, play against Detroit, he couldn't have looked better. But, I mean, that was one of the worst, least energetic performances we've seen in the NFL from the Detroit Lions, maybe in the history of the sport. A complete laydown in a dome, perfect scenario. I don't think that's who he is. If they get to the playoffs and they win a game, is the season a success? I think generally the answer is yes, but I'd have to see the play calling because the big thing has been, will Arians come off his high horse about Brady throwing the ball downfield? Will he let Brady be Brady and you know, run those option routes on third down. If he does, then I think it's a win that the two have generally worked it out. But if he goes down, blaze of glory, throwing the ball downfield, interceptions, misfires, under a ton of pressure, holding the football longer than he wants to, then Arians has to go because he is not down with how Tom Brady likes to win. And then I would think it wouldn't be as successful as the record would lead you to believe.
On to a basketball topic here. I said yesterday, it is amazing how great Brady is. There's always a sense we're trying to kind of discredit it. It's the system, which is nonsense because Josh McDaniels had the system in multiple places, and it didn't work anywhere. In the Rams, he was 32nd in scoring, Denver 20th, this year like 25th. So I don't buy into the system. And same with LeBron. There's a little discrediting. He goes to great teams. And I said the other day, Brady and LeBron are not as beloved as Favre and Jordan because the marketing was different. Jordan and Favre did Hanes and hot dogs and Gatorade and Wranglers, and they were one of you, even though we don't think MJ hangs with everybody. But Brady and LeBron are like Beats and Uggs and aspirational and avocado ice cream, and it separates from us. And that is why Favre is more beloved than Brady, though Brady's 1,000 times better. And Jordan is still more popular than LeBron, even though LeBron's going to shatter everything he's done. That's my takeaway on why. Your thoughts?
It's the branding.
I think the branding kind of is more relatable with Jordan and Favre. It's very Oreos and hot dogs and Hanes. And by the way, Jordan was Noah's good teammate. Favre was Noah's a good teammate. Brady and LeBron are great teammates.
I just saw LeBron in an AT&T ad. I mean, he there's a lot of stuff with him as a parent. He started a school. Look, the last thing you're going to get me, anyone's going to get me to do, not you, but be to take shots at LeBron, the human being. Can he be hard to deal with? Yes. Does he have to have it his way? Yes. But I will say that he did buy in to a coach he hadn't played for and he'd only beaten last year, and his buy-in and his leadership was the reason they won the championship in the bubble more so than anything else. Anthony Davis's spectacular ability to go along with his leadership and his play. But I just think, like, look, we're trying to compare eras. It's different, right? It's just different. You could get away with the things that Favre could get away with interception-wise, right? You can't get away with now. Now we're about efficiency. And that's why Rodgers is incredible. Rodgers doesn't turn the football over, which is the number one determinant into who wins and loses games. In terms of, I think the Jordan and the LeBron thing is very similar. You know, same shoe company, although obviously Jordan has Jordan brand, which was established. LeBron's going to be a billionaire when he's done with Nike, if he's ever done with Nike. I just think we're trying to compare eras, and things are so different now with all of the debate shows like yours, podcasts and all the different and every game is nationally televised. I just think right now we're reaching a point of LeBron fatigue. Yeah. And that's why there's a little bit of pushback. There's a little bit of Brady fatigue. And that's why there's a pushback. It's not as much them. It's that we haven't seen enough competition for either of them at the top. And that's no fault of their own. Right. Like, Kevin Durant beat LeBron twice in a row, and he would have won a third championship, but he got hurt, and then he missed a year. And so there was no – and the Clippers fell apart. So there was no direct competition. That's not either of their fault, but I think the reality is they're all corporate superstars. They're all-time legends, and Brady is different than Favre, but it was also a different era, so we have to view it as such and judge it as such.
All right, we got to go. That was good. Where are you watching?
Wait! I got
no,
one thing.
No! We don't have time. It's commercials and stuff. Oh, it's a very popular show. Like, advertisers line up for this, Doug. We're very, very busy here.
I know.
Yeah, we're very so disappointed, like a kid.
Happy New Year, Joy. Yeah. Happy New Year,
thank
to Joy.
You, Doug.
Happy New Year to
Happy
you,
New
Colin.
Year.
All right, Doug Gottlieb. Good stuff. The Dugger, Fox Sports Radio, after our show. Greg Cosell, top of next hour. One of the things I want to talk about is tomorrow's the big college football games. I think Ohio State is going to keep it really close against Clemson. I just bet the Buckeyes plus 7.5 in the under. I think it's going to be the D-line for Ohio State is going to kind of control Clemson's offensive line. I don't know who wins. It's going to be really, really close, and it's going to be kind of an ugly, low-scoring game, low-scoring 24-23-ish. I think Alabama probably rolls. We're going to go to an 18 playoff here pretty soon, and one of the reasons is because of COVID and pandemics, these athletic departments need money, like the big dogs, like Oklahoma needs money, and Ohio State and Wisconsin and Alabama. So we're going to go to an 18 playoff because that's going to be the ATM machine for all these. But just to, I really have a strong feeling is when we go to 8, and it may be next year. I'm not joking. It may be right after National Letter of Recruit Day. The next month, we may go to 8. Why nothing is going to change. And I'll talk about the two games tomorrow. That's coming up, The Herd.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
M-Drive, check it out. Powerful ingredients backed by science. Go to mdriveformen.com today. Free shipping, 60-day money-back guarantee. So tomorrow, our Final Four in college football is kind of typical. Bama, Clemson, Ohio State, and this year the fourth team is Notre Dame. You know I'm a big fan of Brian Kelly. I do believe at least in the next 2 years we will expand to an eight-team playoff. That is fine. Joy, I think you were telling me yesterday you've kind of turned, you want it. Listen, if it means more March Madness feel to college football and less of these insipid bowl games that nobody watches or nobody goes to, I'm fine with it. I think from an entertainment standpoint, it's probably best for you, the fans. It's probably best for me, the talk show host. It puts more people in the party, more hope. But I just want to realize the more March Madness expanded to 68 teams, it's still the six programs that mostly you look at every year. And my feeling is right now we've got three of the four teams we know are going to be in it, and Notre Dame's the fourth team. So if you went to an eight-team playoff, would it look the same, seven or eight teams? I think it absolutely would. This is my belief of the eight teams that will dominate an eight-team playoff. And at the end, I'll tell you they all have one thing in common. Number one would be Clemson. Why? Unlike other powers, they do not lose their assistant coaches. They've won 31 of 32 ACC games. So they're in the weakest conference of all the powers. Dabo's in his coaching prime, and they don't lose their assistants. Number two would be Alabama. They do lose their assistants, and the SEC is harder. So you have little semi-roadblocks, much harder to go undefeated in the SEC. But Nick Saban is signed through 2025, and he's the best coach to me, the best overall architect in college football history. Number three, Ohio State. Like ACC football champion Clemson, they've separated from their conference. Now, the Big Ten is better than the ACC, so I can see them stumbling every year. But they have so many overpowering, dominating wins. They're a recruiting power. Ryan Day is a hot young coach that everybody now says may have an NFL future. They're 22-1 under Ryan Day in the Big Ten. Michigan is no threat. Wisconsin doesn't have the talent. And Penn State's good and can be threatening but less consistent. Number four would be Oklahoma. Again, like Clemson, if Texas doesn't come back, it's a conference in which, as a top eight recruiting power, they just have better players. They also have never been afraid to play an SEC team. They crushed another one last night in Florida. They've gone toe-to-toe with SEC teams. They recruit against them. They don't fear them. They can score on them. They ran up and down the field on the Gators defense last night. And since Lincoln Riley became the coach, they have had the number one passer efficiency rating, and that's with a lot of transfer quarterbacks. He's figured out the math on offense in the Big 12. They're going nowhere. Number five would be Georgia. I don't think Kirby Smart is in the same class of coach as Dabo, as Saban, as Lincoln Riley. But they may be the first or second best job in college football. It's a great city, Athens. It's a recruiting power. Georgia's got 9 million people and as many recruits as California with 38 million people. It may be the best recruiting state per capita in the country, and Kirby Smart is a great recruiter. They got nothing but NFL bodies. They're the only team in the SEC that on an annual basis plays Alabama, and you watch the games and think they have as many NFL guys as Alabama. LSU occasionally does, but they're not in this list because I don't think they know who their coach is in the next 5 years. Number six is Notre Dame. They are starting to pull away from their two big out-of-conference rivals, Stanford and USC. That is significant. That's 2-0. They're not as good in ACC as Clemson. They beat them this year, backup quarterback. But Brian Kelly's contract, 4 more years on it. He's won 73% of his games. He's worked with 5-6 different quarterbacks. They recruit at a level that Notre Dame has not recruited since Lou Holtz. They're going to be in this 8-team playoff virtually every year. Number seven, Oregon. They've separated from the Pac-12. Mario Cristobal is a great recruiter. They are beating Alabama on offensive linemen. He's a former offensive lineman. They got nothing but NFL guys up front. They just put three NFL guys on their offensive line, maybe four in the NFL. They've separated from the conference. They had the number one recruiting class once again in the Pac-12 for the second straight year. So I know for the next 4 or 5 years, they got NFL bodies. They really crush in California recruiting. I'm down here. I see it. Oregon's going to be in that 8-team playoff a ton when it starts. And I would say number eight was my toughest choice. I would put Florida in over Texas A&M. I like Dan Mullen more than Jimbo Fisher. I think Florida is a more attractive place for recruits. I think Mullen's an offensive coach in an increasingly offensive-leaning SEC. He does lose occasionally to unranked opponents, but it's a state school in an amazing recruiting state. And I think all of the coaches, all eight of them, have one thing in common. They've all got a presence. None of those coaches are leaving where they're at. If Saban was 45, he would. None are leaving where all those head coaches are staying where they at. They all have a presence. They're all recruiting powers. Those eight, to me, dominate college football going forward. Greg Cosell, NFL Meat Sandwich, next hour two in L.A. It's The Herd.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.